Good. Is everyone here?
Okay.
Yes, yeah.
We're here. Okay, wonderful. Everyone had a good month?
Yeah, we were all here.
Yeah, some light. You're late. It's adjusting some lighting here. Okay. Okay, we're good.
Good.
Should I increase the volume a little bit?
Sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvi mavadhetavantu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti.
Welcome again, everyone, to this next study session of Keno Upanishad that we've been seeing. We got to see the introduction to Keno Upanishad. We saw that Keno Upanishad, it's a very dynamic Upanishad in the sense that it touches any type of seeker, depending on what it is that you're trying to find, or not what, but how, right? So what we've seen is, we're seeing now is chapter one. Basically, this is the highest standpoint at which we can understand the nature of self, the nature of Bhagavan, nature of God, whatever it is that you want to call that entity. We've seen the first two mantras, maybe. And basically the first two mantras are kind of the beginning saying that, you can almost say also these two were almost like a test to come back to what we've learned in previous texts. Because as we've seen, the things, for example, like the different senses, that Brahman being the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, just going back and trying to refresh what you've already learned. But now we're trying to take that a step higher to use the mind to understand something that can't be comprehended by the mind. So this is where Vedanta comes into a very beautiful crux. So we will now see mantra three. Mantra three is actually a very popular one, especially that first line, extremely popular and quoted many times. So Upanishad says,
Natatra chakshur kacchati nava kacchati no manaha navit. Mo navijanamo yate tadanisha tadanushyat anya deva tad vidita tato avidita dadhi iti shushruma purksham ye nasta dya chachakshire.
So, especially this first line, good to always keep in mind. Natatra chakshur gachati nava gachati no manaha. So it talks about that. You can say the subject of this this matter is Brahman. It doesn't say it in that first we could say line. It says na tatra, so chakshur gachati, to that thing the eyes don't go there. Remember, we're talking about Brahman, who's beyond qualities. So first it says na chakshur gachati. It means the eyes don't go there. This is representative of what? All of the jnana indriyas. Okay? This chakshur basically means the jnana indriyas, organs of perception, which are, as we know, the ability to hear, the ability to feel, the ability to see, taste, and finally smell. So there, to that Brahman, we cannot basically comprehend it with our jnana indriyas. It's completely beyond those things. Then it says, Navakachati. Now, based on our previous knowledge, and based on what happened, the first line, what do you think this vak represents?
Karma Indriya.
Very good. Karma Indriya. So the organs of action, which we know they are, let me see, the ability to speak. I should ask you, what are the organs of action? Beak is one. This one. Remember this one? Grasping.
Then? No, walking.
Yeah. Good.
And then expression and
expression and procreation.
Perfect. Yeah. Good. So it's saying that even with our karma, with our organs of action, we also can't know that thing. Okay? Because those things also don't go there. This word gach here that you're seeing, gachati, gach means to go, but here it literally means when the senses go, right? So interpretation, right? For example, if I have this pencil, my eyes go to the pencil. Sometimes we say that, right? Or my eyesight. Same thing here. This is why we're using the word gach, which comes from gum, which means to go. Finally, it says, no manaha. So the jnana indriyas don't go there, that's chakshu. The karma indriyas don't go there, that's vak. So what would be manaha?
Mind.
Mind, which is? Antakarna. You heard this word before? Antakarna. So, who hasn't heard this word before? Antakarna. Inner instruments. Everyone's aware? Good. So, we can say Antakarna also does not go there, which means Brahman, we can say, is not present in our jnana indriyas, is not present in karma indriyas, is also not present in our emotions, our ego, our intellect, or our memory as well. Now keep in mind, when we say, because someone can argue then and say, well, how is it that Brahman is not in these things? Brahman is everywhere, right? Keep in mind that when we say Brahman is in something, that is incorrect in Vedanta. Okay? We have to say Brahman is more like the reason, or not the reason, the in the presence of Brahman, this thing can be, all these things happen. So always keep that in mind. There has to be a split there, okay? In the sense that I am wearing the snowsuit, right? It does not mean I am the snowsuit. I just use that snowsuit, or because of that, I wear that snowsuit and then I take it off. In the same way, in the presence of Brahman, we can say all of these things, the entire universe goes and is sustained. But always keep in mind that distinction has to be there. Okay. Then it says, Navidmo Navijanami. Navijanima maha. So basically, that is a the way the Sanskrit is for that Vijanam. Nimaha is, it cannot be known. Okay? Because the thing is, when we say Brahman is known, we always have to keep in mind who is knowing, right? When, as soon as we say this thing can be known, it means that there is a separation there, instant separation between me and through these, instant separation between me and the object, okay? Now, before we move on, I actually just had a quick discussion question, okay? What difficulties do you find there are with, Jnana Indriyas, Karma Indriyas, and Antakarana in, attachment to objects or the way we experience objects? What difficulties do we have? Let's start with Jnana Indriyas, okay? What are the most difficult things that you find?
Well, the thing is, you know what you know, but you don't know what you don't know. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay.
Unless you know and you've seen that before, like if you're seeing it, you cannot make any connection with what that is that you see.
Mm-hmm. So your distinction there is between the object and knowing. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Excellent. Perfect. That is difficult due to the fact that we don't see knowledge in itself, like the act of knowing, as something separate and distinct. Okay. I'll give you a very clear example. Right. Let's say I teach a tabla class as well throughout the week. So on Wednesday nights, and there are 3 students in our class. So what I do is I teach the same class on the board. Right. There's one student. He will look at it and he has his phone. And every time I always tell him about this, but he uses his phone and he types everything out really quickly, and then he doesn't look at it again. Okay. There's one student, he will make diligent notes, very, very diligent notes, but he has an issue with transcribing that now to the actual tabla practice in itself. The third fellow, he barely makes any notes, but when he's practicing, whatever I teach him, he will do it perfectly afterwards, and he'll remember it too for the next class, right? You see, all 3 of them will practice tabla in a different way, right? That actual act of practice is very different from the knowledge that I'm giving, okay? So for example, if we know the art of practice, we can actually be good at anything and we can excel at anything we do. But that actual art of practice is like what we're talking about here, okay? So the actual knowing in itself is different from all of the other things we can say in the world. That's the distinction we have to make. It's a very subtle distinction and it takes a lot of time. But this is basically what you're talking about. It's the art of knowing. For example, the art of practice. If you know how to practice effectively, you can master anything. Even the art of study, if we look at that. So what other issues do we have with Jnana Indriyas in separating them from, we can say, Brahman? If nobody else has anything to add, we can always move to karma. But if there's anything else for Jnana?
I think the whole aspect of Brahman is, like you said, the distinction that you made with the tabla players. The idea, it's an experiential thing. It's not something that you just, it's an experiential knowing or whatever. It's not a knowing outside of the context of, like you said, you have the notes, but then the notes doesn't translate to knowledge in your mind and doesn't come out in the act of playing the tabla. Then that knowledge is separate from you.
Hmm.
And so it is there, but it is not practiced, right? So the idea that it is inherent or intrinsic to you, and you don't have to have a separate notebook or a separate thing to kind of capture it, means you have, I mean, either you have absorbed it or you have no clue what it is. If you absorb it completely, it will come out straight in your, in whatever you do. So that's intrinsic, but to me, I think that's intrinsic knowledge. And the other one is more an external, extrinsic kind of a knowledge. And it is there, I know it, but I don't really know it. Because I don't, I've never translated that back into action, or I've not imbibed it yet into myself. So it's always remained there, and I may know it from afar, but I really don't know it.
Okay.
Is it the difference between knowledge and wisdom? When it comes to wisdom?
Absolutely. Knowledge, we can say, is more like when you're at the Shravanam, beginning of Mananam, that's like knowledge, okay? For example, I read Natatra Chakshur Gacchati, and I tell you Natatra Chakshur Gacchati, okay? And let's say I've never seen this before. I've just seen the letters, right? It's knowledge right now, okay? It's knowledge. Because I've heard it, and now I've told you it, right? Now, if I was to take this and say, Natatra Chakshur Gacchati, what is na? What is tatra? What is chakshur? What is gacchati? I start questioning these things. Once I find out the meaning, now I say, okay, I know the English meaning. What is it? How does it pertain to Vedanta? How does it pertain to my life? The mananam starts here, right? The mananam's going. When it becomes niridhyasana, when it becomes an experience, not just an experience, but knowledge that's settled, right? I've looked at it from every angle, and finally I've made my decision, okay, this is the right thing. This is the knowledge that's, I shouldn't say right thing. This is the thing that we can say settles with me most. Then that thing becomes wisdom. So it's just simply between Shravanam and Niridhyasanam, when you make that distinction, then it goes from knowledge to wisdom. Sorry, question? Yeah.
Several of the Upanishads say that Om is Brahman. So then when we're hearing Om chanted, that's perceived through the Nana Indriya. Is that true? So there's something I'm missing. Because do you see my question?
Yes. I understand it. Because we're putting a name to something that Upanishad's saying should have no name. Right? Like that?
Well, I mean, we're hearing the sound of Om. Maybe I've misinterpreted the Upanishads, but it seems literally Brahman is Om. Om is Brahman. They're identical in power, in whatever you want to call it. There's an identity. It's almost like there's an equal sign.
Mm.
So if we're hearing the sound of Om, and this is coming through the Indriya, then it seems to me we're, through the senses, we are experiencing Brahman. That's my question. Which this Upanishad said is not possible.
Okay, I understand. Okay. Now I understand the question. Okay. So when we hear the word, we can say the syllable Om, it's as though we're using our jnana indriya to interpret Brahman or to cognize Brahman. Right? Which has basically is against what the Upanishad says, because jnana indriyas don't go there. That's the question, right?
Well, the jnana indriyas do know it because we're hearing Om. That's what I'm trying to reconcile.
Okay, I see. See, what happens is we can say Brahman when Brahman manifests, remember, Brahman manifests through, we can say, that Om, in the sense that That is how we as jivas can interpret that. Okay. Now, when it says that it's not the jnana indriyas, it's aside from the jnana indriyas, it means that it is the cause of all creation. So it is that the fact that it's just the cause means that it can't also, we can say, be knower. How do I explain this?
Actually, why are we interpreting bad as non-Indian? It's just the speech, right? What is speech? What is the meaning? What is speech? What is practice? Literal meaning of the word what is speech, right? It comes from what.
Okay.
So, like a simpler meaning, natatra chakshur gacchati. The mind does not go, the eyes does not go there. In other words, would it be right to say that we cannot, the mind, which eyes does not travel there, that means the eye cannot see it. The speech cannot talk about it, so it is beyond speech. And the mind cannot think about it, because it is beyond mind. So if you take vaga speech, then I think all gnanendriyas are not included, no?
That's
probably Kamendriya. All the Kamendriyas in Vag are included. Vag is speech.
Yes. Yeah. Keep in mind, Vag is speech. That's Karma Indriyas, but we're talking about Jnana Indriyas right now. Make sure you make the distinction in the sense that Vag is just speech, but listening, actually being able to hear, that's a Jnana Indriya. That's the distinction you have to make there. Was that your question?
No, normally, whenever they talk about chakshu in the shastra, mm-hmm. it's an indication for the entire jnanendriya.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Okay, I'm not sure what the question was. But anyways, let's go back to the first question, and then we'll answer yours, sir.
Sorry, I had no question. I was just... simpler interpretation or translation.
Okay.
Translation.
Okay. Main thing to keep in mind is as soon as there's any type of perception, okay? As soon as you hear anything, whether it be Om, whether it be music, whether it be the Akar, okay? As soon as there's perception, there's duality. Okay? Because there's a knower and there's a known. So when we say that Om and Brahman are, we can say the same thing, but then why is it that we are hearing this thing, right? You have to keep in mind on a vyavaharik or a, we can say laukik or a worldly standpoint, right? Om is Brahman.
Transactional way is only Brahman.
So when you're hearing that sound Om, okay, that is like Brahman. From a lokic standpoint, from a sansaric standpoint, from a worldly standpoint, okay? But when we talk about a paramarthic or a total standpoint, it is completely beyond all that because there's no sound and there's also no listener as well. All those things kind of, it's not that they fade away, but they don't exist because there's just oneness, right? Because we see the duality, the multiplicity, that's why Om is Brahman. Okay. Sorry?
Om is also called Shabd Brahman.
Yes, right. But only, always keep in mind, only from a laukik standpoint. Only from a, we can say a vyavaharik or a worldly standpoint, Om is Brahman. That's what it means. But now we're not talking on the, we can say a laukik standpoint, because remember I said Keno Upanishad, the first couple mantras, are basically reflective of the high standpoint. So this is why when we say that that notion of Om is a sound, that's for later chapters. Right now we want to try to look at it from the highest standpoint, okay? Is it a bit more clear now? Yes, question?
Why they are the person who is aware of their own existence, so they know how to own it.
Sorry, you're going to have to speak up a little bit. I can't really hear.
But if you're the person who is aware of their own existence, is there still duality, even though they didn't know, I don't know, because they are aware of their own existence. They know about their own existence.
I'm sorry, I still can't understand. Can you maybe move a little closer or something?
I think the question is, I think the question is, since a person is aware of, or if a person is aware of his own or her own existence, is that person aware of Brahman? Is that correct?
No, is there still duality?
Is there still duality?
The one thing that we're always aware of is our existence. Okay. The words "I exist" always have to, as Swami Prakashananda said, it always has to precede everything. Okay. Whenever we talk about anything in the universe, "I exist" always has to be first. Okay. Because there always has to be a knower of the universe, who is me. So that existence principle has to precede absolutely everything. This doesn't suggest that I now know subjectively that I'm Brahman, okay? It just means that I know I exist as an individual at this point. Whenever we say that word, "I exist," it means just from an individual standpoint. Because a realized person would never say, "I exist." Ever. They would just say existence is. That's it. Like that.
Oh, because
Yeah, next question. There was a question?
Not a question, Sachinji. You asked what is the most difficult thing about Jnanendriya. To me, the most difficult thing is the memory. Although I get the knowledge, but I cannot recall so easily. Unless it goes on and on and on, then only I will be able to recollect. So, to me, the most difficult thing is the recollection of the jnana.
Okay.
From the jnanendriya, whatever we are getting.
Okay. So with memory, one of the main things to remember... One of the main things to remember is the fact that memory is something that I think a lot of people say that my memory is going, my memory is slipping me. The brain is such a beautiful thing in that it's one of those things that the more you use it, is the better it gets. It doesn't wear away. Okay. So with memory in itself, there are many different tricks you can use, different memory games and this type of thing. But one of the, we can say, easiest ways to improve memory, or if you'd like to make your memory better, is you start doing some type of chanting. Chanting really helps with memories, especially Vedic chanting, because to remember where the swaras are, up and down, it takes a lot. And what you'll notice is that because it's a constant repetition, but at the same time, it's not something that's necessarily, we could say, like boring or stale or dry, because it's going in different ways, different swaras, up and down. It's one of the best ways to build our memory. Either way, study of Vedanta, study of Upanishad will help, because you are studying the nature of the mind, not just memory in itself, but the nature of the mind. So because you understand the nature of the mind a little bit more, you understand how it works. On an individual level again, right? For example, I know that when I was in university, I needed, after every hour and a half, 2 hours of study, I would watch something for maybe 22 minutes, half hour, because I knew that I started to realize that after 2 hours, my mind needs just that little bit of a break. Now, what I realized is I started to figure out the nature of my own mind. And when I started to figure out that nature, then I could figure out how to make it work to my own benefit. I think, especially with everyone there, your background of Vedanta and everything, you should have at least a little bit more of a base of the nature of your own mind. and what you're capable of, what you're not, and how to practice certain things. So taking all of that into account, this is how you could increase your memory. We should do karma and then antakarana. So karma indriyas. Okay, for this one, let's specifically look at Vak. Okay, I think I mentioned this before, but Santa Mahatma, they say that when one can control one's tongue, it's like almost like moksha. Because remember, keeping in mind that there are three senses attached to tongue, right? The sense of feeling, the sense of taste, and this karma indriya as well, the sense of speech, right? So if there's ever one sense or one thing that you should continue to strive for, it's control of the tongue on all fronts. I remember a nice example was when I was in Trinidad and Guruji was there, and somebody gave him two gulab jamun like this. And he took half of one and he said, "That's all I need." It's a very simple example, but for some reason that example always sits with me. If there's ever a time when, okay, maybe I want a little bit of extra this or a little bit of extra that, I remember that so simply Guruji just cut half of that one gulab jamun and all there were a few in front of him, and that was enough for him. Anything on karma indriyas? What would be difficult?
It's actually tricky with karma indriyas, you know, from my perspective, because I think, you know, the thing is to, kind of like today I was listening to Prakashanji, and he was talking about, you know, this, I mean, if you find fault with this world, the problem is not with the world, the problem is with you. And so it's understood, but to actually practice it, whether it is through speech or it is through any action, you know, you have to almost put yourself, you know, go above yourself, if you will. I mean, because you cannot have, you know, even simple family life, right? There are things you notice, you have to deal with them. You just have to accept them and move on, right? So when you have to accept and move on and you can't find fault with it, because if you find fault, the fault is not really with the world. Everything in this world is perfect in the Vedantic sense. The problem is, if you look at it and you find fault, the problem is with you. And the example that he gives is, you know, he asked, Dronacharya asked to Yudhishthira and Duryodhana to go around the world and find, Duryodhana to find a good person, and Yudhishthira to find a bad person, and both of them come back saying that we couldn't find anybody. Because their own perception of the world, as Yudhishthira's perception of the world, is a great place, and I couldn't find a bad person. Because his own thinking was, there is, you know, everybody, I am probably the worst of the lot. And Duryodhana came back saying exactly the same word and said, well, there's no good person in this world. Everybody is evil. Right? So I guess taking that and applying it to our life, when we go out there, it's the way we look at the world, it'll be colored by our own, the way we look at the world will color our view of the world as well, in a different way. So I think any of the jnana indriyas, any of the karma indriyas essentially have that fault. And to go beyond that is a tough thing. No, that's...
I really couldn't link that.
Okay, that's fine. No, I took
it. But anyway, Sachinji, karma indriyas, as I see the limitations, there are definitely memory is not an issue, because once you learn walking, you know walking. So memory is not the issue there. But I think for me, from the limitation perspective, it is a limitation on what they can do. So they get tired after some time. that is the major limitation with the Kanyan day.
Okay.
In this day and context is the mantra we are meditating.
Okay. So a few things were touched on. I'm echoing a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Okay, thanks. So on the first question, the easiest way to do this is keep in mind that the entire universe is actually an extension of yourself. So all of those issues that you were talking about, I'm not sure if this is working, or I have this problem in the world, or everything, anything, they're all an extension of you. Because keep in mind that the reason why you're experiencing the universe that you are is because of you. Because of your own vasanas, because of your own intentions, because of your own karma, because of everything that you have decided in some past life, it's now being experienced in this lifetime. Right? This just shows that everything that you experience, everything that's in front of you, all of the people, all of the situations, all the places, everything is completely an extension of you. Whether good or bad. Right? And remember that the whole idea of good or bad is even something that we should let go of. Because good or bad is really constructed by human beings. So always keep in mind that everything is a complete extension of you. That was for the first question. Second question. Those limitations, they happen, we can say, again, that is an expression of vasana, of past karma, that type of thing. The main thing to keep in mind with karma indriyas, and where I was kind of trying to, not gear the conversation, but was looking for this, is that one of the areas I think that people, you all may not find it, but based on generally the crowd that I'm seeing, you could say children will be in a stage where this one of their big problems will be procreation, or the control of that. Okay, I've been to a few schools, a few universities, and I've spoken not just universities, but especially high schools, and I've spoken about this. One thing that we should keep in mind is that there are some things, especially within our community, that become very taboo, a little bit difficult to speak about, right? I found that when I was younger, I was lucky enough that my parents found it comfortable enough to speak to me about things like, for example, procreation. And I feel that, as immature as I was then, if that hadn't have happened, I think that my life would have been different and some of the decisions I would have made too, just looking back at my life now. So one thing to keep in mind with that, that karma indriyas, is if you ever get the opportunity to speak to, again, I don't know how old your kids will be, but if you ever get the chance to guide somebody in this area, please do so. Because as young people, sometimes the guidance is needed, but we don't know where to go. I think that can wrap it up for karma indriyas. For antakarana, I want to specifically speak about mind. What difficulties do we have with mind?
What difficulties don't we have?
That's why you're all here, right? Always treat everything as a tool. Every single thing. Be sakshi to absolutely everything, including mind. This is where we falter. When we become the anger, when we become the jealousy, when we become these emotions, even love, be careful. When we become love,
That is a clear sign of attachment. Always be sakshi to all things. You literally have to treat, if you have to picture, treating the anger as a tool, some type of tool. Did I tell you all this story about the summer camp with the camper who broke a clock?
Okay. No.
So this was last year. I was in DC for a youth camp. I was in one of the rooms just having lunch, and a few of the other teachers were there with me. And what happened was, all of a sudden, we heard a big crash in the other room. So we were like, I went then proceeded to storm into the room and ask, what happened? Now, everyone was a little scared, but the youth who, basically what happened was he was throwing a water bottle up and down and he hit a clock and the clock broke and shattered into pieces. So I said, okay, Anish, come with me. So I left the classroom and he came into the lunchroom. And I said, okay, Anish, sit. So he sat. What I did was I proceeded to finish my lunch. Okay. I didn't say anything to him. He didn't say anything to me. He just sat there and watched me finish my lunch. Okay. Now his mother was also in the room. So you can imagine everyone was just sweating bullets. By the end of it, what happened was I said, Anish, you know, I understand you're here volunteering. You're giving up your summer to help others. My problem doesn't come with you having fun. My problem comes when I can't tell the difference between a camper and a volunteer. Do you understand? And he said yes, and then he left. Now, I came in with anger, okay? When I came in with anger, I knew that I was, if at the pin drop, I could drop that anger if I needed to and then embrace something else. So I used anger when I came in. When I came out and I was just eating my lunch, I wasn't really using anything, but at the end I used some compassion. Okay. Every single emotion, this is just an example to show you, every single emotion should literally be like a tool in your hand. Use them as a toolbox, including anger. When anger is used effectively, it can be, we can say, beneficial. This is the main thing to keep in mind with the mind. Anything else anybody want to add before we finish off this last 2 minutes? You had a lot of discussion today, yes, but it's good.
Just one thing, you know, the thing is, even though, I mean, there's one aspect of knowing these things, right? But when you're in this, when you're in the transactional world, when you're actually doing the things that you're doing on a daily basis, right? Be it your work or be it anything, right? You're actually, you need to have your mind focused on those activities when you're doing it. You cannot be, you cannot, you know, kind of completely separate yourself from there. You have to be completely focused, in fact, when you're doing things, right? So, in doing that, you know, isn't there a dichotomy there? I mean, in a way, isn't there a dichotomy there as to what Vedanta says and when you're actually functioning in your real world?
Mm-hmm. See, the difference comes from we have to now leave that thing, okay? I'm here, I'm doing this class then, we can say, right? Mind is completely focused on teaching this class, okay? Now, I can use this time and this everything to teach this class, but then at a moment's notice, I have to also be able to completely remove myself from the class, okay? Now, something like a class is very easy to do. But what happens is, the more and more involved we get with the world, is the more and more we think that we actually cannot remove ourselves from being actively involved with that thing. This is the difference we can say. This is where the dichotomy kind of breaks up, okay? In the sense that, I'm going to experience
this, I come back again, the emotions. I'm going to experience this anger completely and use it, but then also be able to detach from it. I can completely focus on what I'm doing and use my tools 100%, almost as if I am them, but then let go of them afterwards. It's the after effect that really you have to focus on, being careful of. We get caught, and then we become those things. So I'm not saying don't use those things, or I'm not saying, you know, that Sakshi Bhav, or that idea that I am a witness, I am apart from these things, that always has to be there. And yes, you have to be actively thinking about it all the time. Yes, it's exhausting, but it becomes easier and easier after a while. Always picture there's something behind. There's something behind. There's something behind all of this. And that's actually 1 to 3. That's what it's trying to hit on. However you have to picture it.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Anything? Oh, we didn't finish the last two lines. Anything before we finish those? Okay, good. So it says, Anya Deva. This is, okay. Anya Deva. This word is probably, aside from the first line, this Anya Deva is the most important, we can say, word in this mantra specifically. Okay? When we talk about something that is known or unknown, right? What would you say is the difference between the two? How do we, what is the difference between something known and something unknown?
Something unknown is unreal.
Sorry?
Something unknown is unreal.
Unknown is unreal, okay.
Anya.
Anya, excellent, very good. That's absolutely right. Basically, unknown, as described by Adi Shankaracharya, is anything other than. Okay? Anything other than is how Bhashyakar explains the unknown. So what does that mean? Basically, anything other than Brahman is what we can say unknown. Anything other than Brahman meaning what? Anything that cannot be cognized. Is unknown. There's only one thing that cannot be cognized, right? That is that Brahman. Everything else in the universe we can cognize to some degree, right? Even space can be somewhat cognized, right? Because I know that, for example, the space for this phone, this we could say case, is this phone, okay? So I can even cognize space. Anything that cannot be cognized is unknown. So anything other than the universe is unknown, which is what? Brahman. So that Anya Deva means other than, which is, Anya Deva is, we can say, almost like Brahman. That's another word for Brahman, just in this mantra. Just in this mantra, okay? Anything other than. Is that clear for everyone? Good. So, Anya Deva Tad Viditad Atho Aviditadadhi. Then it says, Iti Shushruma Purvesham Ye Nastad Vyachakshire. So, it says basically that those gurus, all of those who have, I shouldn't even say gurus, I should say those who have experienced this Brahman, or we can say who have gone beyond this world, mentally I'm talking about, right, and on a more subtle level, they're the ones who explain the fact that anything besides the universe is Brahman, anything besides known, which is unknown, okay? That's simply what the ending is saying, okay?
Any questions on mantra 3? I think we have 5 more minutes-ish, a little bit longer. Any more questions on mantra 3? Okay, so let's see 4. We'll at least chant it. We'll go into it a little bit, and then we'll close, okay?
Sachinji.
Yes?
How do we interpret the phrase yate tadanu shishyat? Second line, last word.
Okay. Yes. So only we can say I had one of the students last Sunday. I said, you all make up a game. Okay? Make up a game and you have to teach now another student in the class, right? So they taught the other student. Afterwards, that student now had to teach another student. And basically it went so that within their group, there were four students in one group, each one knew each other's game, okay? So now I said, okay, now you all go to another group and teach the games, right? All four games, each student has to teach the another student, so in another group, right? So basically, two students got together and they taught each other the four games, okay? And then I asked them, I said, okay, which game was easiest for you to teach? Each one of them said the one that I created, right? Which is natural, right? Similarly, we can only instruct somebody on something that we know very well. But the thing that we can instruct somebody on the most or the easiest or we could say the most powerfully is something we've done or created ourselves to, right? If you want to know how to fix a Mazda, you would go to Mazda dealership, right? Toyota, you go to Toyota dealership. Similarly, the only one we could say that can be, this word instructed not only means, it means basically, how do I say, the manifestation of the universe, okay? The only one who knows how to manifest this universe completely is Bhagwan or Ishwara or whatever you want to call it, okay? So basically it's saying that the only one who can, we can say, instruct one about this entire universe, how it's been built, how to, we can say, even go beyond that is Brahman, okay? Now, Brahman's not here to tell us to do this or do that or do this to do that, right? So this is how we cannot instruct others how to do it. So you might say, okay, well then, Sachinji, why are you even here, right? If you can't instruct us, then who will, right? I can't instruct you because I can only tell you so much. What you have to do is you have to now make that a complete experience for you. And that does not become an experience for you until it does become an experience for you. I can't lead you there. Okay? Just in the same way as if I am to chant a mantra, that doesn't mean I have moksha, right? Because chanting mantras does not lead to moksha. Moksha in itself is moksha. It's just an experience, okay? So then people will ask me, okay, well, why is it that we chant then? Chanting helps lead us towards moksha being easier, but it does not lead to the direct experience of moksha. In the same way, we cannot, even as acharyas, instruct you on this knowledge. We can help guide you in everything, but we cannot give you a direct experience. I can't hold my hand over your head and say, okay, you have moksha now. This is why it says that we can't even know how to instruct a person on how to do it because of the fact that it has to literally just be a direct experience.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that explains it. It's hard to be taught, hard to teach.
Not only hard to teach, but also, again, that will not be a direct experience for you, even if I teach this, until it becomes a direct experience. I can't tell you this, and then all of a sudden it's like, I realize, like that.
Parokshanubhuti.
Sorry?
Parokshanubhuti.
Exactly. Question?
The interpretation of the mantra is not sitting very well with me. You see a greater emphasis on body identification.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the second part.
There appears to be a greater emphasis on body identification.
Okay, there seems to be a very, sorry, like body identification in this mantra is very high, you say?
On body identification and on the person's body.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So
the one statement here, it is the very consciousness that makes it possible for the eyes to see. That sits very clearly to me. That's right on the mind. When we start talking about emotions, they're putting emphasis on that. They're saying it's life. Then we are emphasizing on the attachment.
Okay. Okay. So, in order for us to go beyond jnanendriyas, karmendriyas, antakarana as well, it has to start from that, we can say, gross aspect. When we can, we can say we understand those things, yes, but when we can completely objectify them, the only way that we can objectify those things is when we separate them, okay? So it's almost like taking a flashlight and putting it on jnana indriyas. Putting it on karma indriyas, putting that flashlight on the antakarana. Because what we're doing is, we are trying to be that person who's holding the flashlight. Okay? Currently, we are still jnana indriyas. We're still karma indriyas. We're still antakarana. Because we're not the person with the flashlight yet. Right? We have to turn the light on and flash the light on these things first. And make them very gross. Make them objects. When we make them objects in our mind, then it's easier for us to separate from them. This is why, especially this mantra in itself, is very heavy on, we can say, Jagat, or the universe itself, or myself. Anything, objects then. Jnana indriyas, karma indriyas, antakarana. We have to continue highlighting those things to separate ourselves from them. Sorry?
We move on.
He said move on?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, one more question. And then I think we might be done class. So yeah.
It's a two-parted question. In yogic traditions, there's Shakti thought, where the teacher is giving the experience of presumably the self to the student. Closer to home, we've read a lot about Ramana Maharshi, and through the gaze of Ramana, people would be lifted up into his state. So,
right. Good question.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's tackle that. Okay. It's like. So here's the light. Okay. The light from my phone. Okay. And then here is something blocking it. Okay. And then I have a pencil. Okay. When Bhagwan Ramana Maharishi gives that experience, he is not giving it. Okay. This is all he's doing. Okay? He is literally just removing all of that ignorance that we have. Okay? And just allowing that to flow. Because always keep in mind that that experience, it's flowing right now through us all the time. But the thing is, it's being blocked. So when Rama, that's the thing, when we say the word Ramana Maharishi gives that, it's not that he himself is that source giving it. He's just removing all the objects that's blocking that source from going. Like that, okay? Yeah. Second part? Yeah. Was that it? Or?
Well, the other part was Shakti, but I think it's the same thing.
Okay, yeah, yeah, same thing. It's literally just removing that. Always remember, we're already free. Yeah. Okay. So this class, I know, was very heavy discussion. What I think we'll do is, for the next one, just for the sake of getting through the mantras, I shouldn't say faster, but a bit more efficiently, we'll save maybe the last 15 minutes of every class, if that's okay with everyone, for discussion, for question and answer, and that type of thing. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Good. So yeah, then in that way, yeah.
The next session will be in 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yes. I will be available for that one, so we'll have that one in 2 weeks, and we'll continue on with 2 weeks, as long as you like, and as long as I'm available, okay? Good, okay. So if anything else, we'll end class.
Om Purnamadah Purnamedam Purnahat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Hari Om, everyone. Thank you all. See you in 2 weeks. Hari Om.
Hari Om.